Welcome to the Wolverine Confidential Podcast. I am Andrew Kahn.
I'm Ryan Zook.
And I'm Aaron McMahon.
The Michigan hockey team lost in the national semifinals for the third straight year. We discuss the game and what comes next for the program. The transfer portal opens for college football players on Tuesday. Will the Wolverines be active? Plus, we've got basketball roster news to discuss coming up on Wolverine Confidential. All right, guys, good to be with you here Monday morning, April 15th. A lot has happened since the last time we talked last Tuesday. So let's get into it. We'll start with a recap of the Frozen Four. Michigan lost on Thursday night 4-0 to Boston College, down 1-0 after the first period. Boston College scored two goals within a minute in the second period, and that was kind of it. They added another one in the third, and that was the final. So yeah, let's just talk about the game itself, Ryan. You were there. What kind of went wrong for the Wolverines in this one?
Yeah, I mean, I knew BC was good. I mean, there's not too many teams that go into the Frozen Four riding like a 14-game win streak. So, but I didn't realize they were that good and that disciplined for being the second youngest youngest team in college hockey. And it basically came down to Boston College's top guns outshined Michigan's, and all four of their first round picks found the score sheet. They took the game over where Michigan's best players were largely quiet for most of the night. So, to be honest, I thought Michigan had a great start in the first period. The first couple shifts, I mean, they had it in the BC zone for over a minute, and then a bad pinch and a 2-on-1 the other way with Ryan Leonard and Will Smith, two of the best players in college hockey. And Leonard feathers it over to Will Smith, who scores. And that ended up being the game deciding goal, a 1 minute, 20 seconds into the game. So, Wolverines outshot the Eagles, but I think BC did a great job keeping Michigan on the perimeter. Their creativity and playmaking ability that we've been accustomed to seeing from Michigan this year, it was basically suppressed by BC. I mean, they're just so good at blocking shots and anticipating plays and getting sticks in lanes. And it was just a dominating defensive performance from them as well. And a really strong, strong performance from their goalie, Jacob Fowler, too. So, once it became 4-0, it's just there's not enough firepower for Michigan to make a comeback. And here we are again talking about another semifinal loss for the Wolverines.
Yeah, Boston College went on. They lost in the championship game to Denver. Denver won that game 2-0. This is, like you said, another loss in the semifinal. It's a third straight year Michigan has lost in this round, and the fourth straight time they've gotten there and lost. So Michigan last reached the national championship in 2011, last won it all in 1998. These are droughts that most programs would be happy to have. It's not embarrassing by any stretch. It's great to get as far as Michigan has, so consistently. But I don't know. It adds to the pain to then get so close and not win at all.
Yeah, no, it really is astonishing at this point. I mean, 1-8 now in the national semifinals since their last title in 1998. Which, there's only two other programs that have reached more Frozen Fours since then, and they've both won multiple titles. So the fact that Michigan remains snake bitten with some of these teams that they've had is kind of mind boggling. But I mean, this year you can't really say like they were supposed to win because they weren't the better team this year. BC was the number one ranked team in the country. Like I said, they were riding a 14 game win streak. Four first round picks that were just had sensational years and really were dominant against Wolverines for stretches. Like Coach Brandon Arado said, they were game breakers. They won the game for their team, and I have to agree with them there. Now, Denver came out the next night and became the first team to shut them out all year to win their NCAA record 10th title. But again, this year wasn't really supposed to be Michigan's year. Previous 2 years, Michigan had the team to do it. But I get why people are frustrated. They get to see their one of four teams remaining. All you got to do is win two games from there, and they just really haven't really been able to win one for a while. So I get the frustration, but I guess if there's a common theme, I mean, there's been some bad puck luck. I mean, another bank goal from behind the goal line against Boston College last year. There was two, and plus a really bad egregious goal that Eric Portillo gave up. The other goalies have outplayed Michigan's goalies in the semifinals, and a lot of the top guys for Michigan haven't showed up in these big games in the Frozen Four. I mean, on Thursday, like Rucker McGordy had the turnover at the offensive zone blue line that led to a Cutter Gauthier breakaway goal, made it 3-0. I mean, that line wasn't as noticeable as they usually are. And Owen Power, Matty Beniers, Luke Hughes in 2 years ago, Kent Johnson with that team with 7 first round picks. They had a largely quiet game last year. Luke Hughes didn't do much. So you need your top guys to show up in this stage, and they haven't really had it. But again, it's you love that they're getting there and they're giving themselves the opportunity. And at some point it's probably going to change. It's just, yeah, I get the frustration. I've heard a lot of people since then. It sucks. I get it. But like, it's, a lot of people, like Andrew said, would love to be in that position, making it the Frozen Fours year in and year out.
Now, I know last year you went down to Tampa and almost melted in the sun. What was the trip like to Minnesota this time around?
Crazy stat for you guys. Two hottest Frozen Four championship games on record the last 2 years. Last year in Tampa and this year in freaking Minnesota, man. It's incredible. It was 80-something degrees at puck drop. Which, I mean, when I covered the Frozen Four in 2018, it literally was snowing, and now it was so beautiful. That was the best part of the Frozen Four this year. Was sun was shining all 3 days I was there. I mean, in the 70s, the last 2 days, just fantastic weather. And I hear the weather in Michigan wasn't very great. So yeah, definitely was not the Frozen Four in Minneapolis this year. It was the very sunny, warm, comfortable, golfing weather Frozen Four this year.
Let's talk it. Yeah, so we had a ton of rain here for a couple of those days, but then, you know, got nice over the weekend. Yesterday I think it might have touched 80 here in Ann Arbor and sunny, so very nice. Let's kind of look ahead with this program, you know, before we move on to some other sports here. You know, my wife saw your headline, I think it was last night, on Frank Nazar commenting on how amazing it is. And I agree, like, hockey's the only sport I could think of where this happens, where, you know, you could be playing a college game one night and in some cases, literally the next night, you know, playing in the NHL, you know, Nazar, of course, yeah. It was few nights later, but scoring a goal. I'm sure some people are wondering where was that goal for Michigan on, you know, Thursday night, but yeah, you know, so obviously he's gone. You know, who are some of the other names, and yeah, what's the kind of roster outlook and just overall you know, thoughts on this program going forward?
Yeah, I mean, Nazar leaving wasn't a surprise. That was kind of expected, but I'm expecting a lot of these guys to come back that have NHL decisions to make. Coach Brandon Nerado said that it's too early to tell. I asked him right after the game, like, how similar to this roster look like? And he thinks a lot of guys are going to come back for next season. And that would be big. I mean, if you get a Gavin Bridley is a junior, a Rucker McGroarty is a junior, Seamus Casey is a junior, that's big time. It's not set in stone, and there's going to be some options to still evaluate. But as of right now, they have not signed. And typically, if NHL teams wanted them and wanted them to get in a couple games before the end of the year, they would have signed already. Still could happen. But and then, yeah, you have a guy like Dylan Duke, who was a 4th-round pick a few years ago. He led the team in goals this year. If he returns for a senior season, that would be a big time for them too. Strong recruiting class coming in. So this wasn't supposed to be the year that they went on a crazy run to win it all. Like, I mean, as we talked about on previous pods, they were on the tournament bubble just over a month ago, and they went on a late game heater and pulled off 2 upsets in the regional just to get to the Frozen Four. I mean, they beat Michigan State to get to the biggest stage. I mean, that's not many people expected that, especially when MSU had their number throughout the year. So there were some positives to take from this year. And yeah, if they can get a lot of these guys back, I think there's a good chance they could be back at next year's Frozen Four in St. Louis.
Is NIL a thing as much in hockey? I don't know if it's maybe because they are able to sign their pro contracts, you know, while they're still playing, or, you know, at least get drafted. Sorry, not signed, but get drafted before they kind of know where they're going to go, maybe what kind of money they're going to get. Is it as important? I don't hear about it as much, but maybe I just don't follow it as much.
That's a great question. Some news outlet asked every coach about NIL at the Frozen Four, and they all kind of downplayed it and said it's coming, but it's not really there yet. But I do think it's going to become, because now the transfer portal is becoming way more prevalent than it was in previous years. You've already seen several first round picks enter the portal and choose their new destinations. MSU just landed a first round pick from Wisconsin. Another Matthew Wood from UConn, first round pick, has entered the portal. So it's becoming a lot more prevalent, and I think it is. But you have to remember too, a lot of hockey guys are international players too, so that could limit their NIL opportunities. So that's another thing to keep in mind, but I do think it is going to be a factor moving forward. But again, it's not like football where you had the Alabamas and the Georgias with these huge, huge, huge collectives that are, I mean, look at the Frozen Four this year. You have like the Quinnipiacs and some other smaller programs that are known to have good hockey programs, and they probably don't have the resources to be doling out millions of dollars in NIL deals to kind of sway players of coming their way. So we'll see, but I it will become more prevalent, I think, as we move forward.
Good to know. All right. Well, speaking of the transfer portal, let's talk a little Michigan football here because it opens tomorrow. This is the second window, right, this year. I mean, it was open leading through like past the national championship game. Is that correct?
Yeah, not only that, but third for Michigan, because once Jim Harbaugh left, it opened up for a few weeks after that, once they named Sharon Moore the coach. So technically for the Michigan players, the third window. But yes, generally speaking, for college football as a whole, it is a second window. It opens tomorrow, as you mentioned, April 16th, and closes April 30th. So it's another two-week span where guys who necessarily aren't grad transfers can enter. They don't necessarily need to declare where they're going. They just have to declare that they want to transfer, they're interested in transferring. And then they'll have the whole month of April and then into the summer, obviously, to make their decisions. Obviously, most of them will make them relatively quickly, but we will see a flurry of activity here relatively shortly.
I mean, I guess players on Michigan could see maybe have a little bit better idea of where they stand in the depth chart and could leave, but I imagine it'd be more the news that we'll see for Michigan would be more adding players than losing players. Is that right? But kind of, I guess, set the table for us on how active Michigan will be. And yeah, I kind of got to both sides of that revolving door.
Yeah, I suspect they will be active. I mean, there's needs at multiple positions. I wrote a story today at MLive.com. Obviously, it's me kind of, you know, pontificating or guessing, but there are spots where I think there's opportunities for them to land guys. I mean, obviously quarterback is an option. If there's a player out there who has enough experience and they feel confident in, I got to suspect they're going to throw a line in the water. Again, receiver, there's a lack of depth there. I could see them looking there. Edge rusher, you know, I think one of the main reasons why Michigan's defense was so good last year was the depth at some of the key spots at edge rusher, at middle linebacker, and the secondary. So I could see them looking at, you know, add some pieces, especially at, you know, edge rusher. They've got their two bona fide starters in Josiah Stewart and Derek Moore, but beyond those two, people don't really know who else is going to be there. And then defensive back, maybe at the beginning of spring, I wouldn't have said defensive back, but given the injuries now to Rod Moore, Keon Sabb transferred out during the last portal window. I do think Michigan could benefit by having an extra, you know, whether it's a safety, a nickel, some type of versatile defensive back with experience, I think would help them. And then that's not to say, and this is all assuming, right? Like Michigan doesn't lose any guys at the portal. They've now had most of the spring to kind of, you know, weigh things and, you know, interact with their new coaches and to kind of see what the schemes are going to be like. Would not surprise me if you see a handful of guys decide to leave. I think if that would probably be a best case scenario for Michigan. The worst case, obviously, is you see a mass exodus. Now, I'm not expecting that, but you know, never say never with, especially on the defensive side of the ball, where you've got new coordinators, you've got a new head coach, and you've now gone through almost an entire spring cycle. And from all accounts we've gotten from players and everyone else, the defense is much, much more ahead than the offense. So if you're a defensive player looking the other side of the ball saying, well, they don't look too good. Are we going to be able to move the football, score points? Are we going to win games? If not, you might be looking elsewhere. So it's going to be an interesting next couple of weeks, I think.
And people, as far as the quarterbacks who are saying, like, well, you already have five, you can't bring another guy in. If they do bring another guy in, I guarantee you there's probably going to be one or two maybe moving out too, looking for opportunities elsewhere, because some of these guys have been kind of waiting in the wings for a while. I mean, at this point, I don't know if Jack Tuttle would try and, for a new opportunity this late in the game, but maybe like a Davis Warren, Jaden Denegal, we'll see. But I think you want to have some sort of you want to give yourselves more options. And if there's someone that you think is probably better than your options right now, might as well bring them in and at minimum give you depth at least midway through the season if something isn't working out with whoever you choose as your starter. And I think you need a big body receiver. You look at the receiving group right now and it's like, who stares you downfield? They don't really have that option. And I think they need to go in the portal and get someone taller than 6'1", 6'2", that can kind of stretch the field a little bit. Because, I mean, yeah, you have Colson Loveland, who's an athletic freak, but he's not going to be running all seam routes or, like, deep routes, too. So it's you need some variety in your receiving group, and I don't think they really have it right now. I think defense, yeah, you could add some more depth pieces, but I think the group, as of right now, as long as there's no more injuries, is pretty formidable. You just need to improve offensively, and I think that's where the main focus should be.
All right, very good. We, we were able to talk with some assistant coaches and players again last week, and one of them was Tony Alford, who came over from Ohio State as a running backs coach, and that just in and of itself is interesting because it's obviously a lateral move. Let's call it what it is. I mean, these are two premier programs, and to be take on the same title essentially, at your new place is interesting. Aaron, you wrote the story. What did Tony kind of have to say about the move, and what did you learn that maybe you didn't know already?
I don't know if I learned anything new. I think we all assumed, right? Like he felt like he kind of been passed over Ohio State. He felt like there wasn't much higher he could go on the staff. So for him, he felt like it was time to move on, which makes sense. But then you see a move from one rival to the other. And I think that's, like you said, that's kind of the story here, just the fascinating arc. I mean, we've seen this before, as we talked about in years past, with Greg Madison and Al Washington moving over to the Ohio State side. At the time, Madison was more of a shock than Washington. But Alford going from Columbus to Ann Arbor, I think, is a shock in and of itself. So he was refreshingly honest. You know, I asked him point blank if he felt like, he had gotten as high as he could in Columbus. And he said, yeah, I mean, there was nothing more he felt like he could do. Ryan Day was obviously had been circulating in new coordinators, new coaches and everything else. And so it was time for him to go. He's an interesting figure, as we've talked about. I mean, he's an older guy in his mid 50s. He's been around the game a very long time. I think he adds certainly a level of experience and maybe, some mentorship to not only the coaches on staff, but obviously the players themselves. He's got an interesting track record, very good recruiter, he's considered. So maybe a so-so talent developer, but I think if you can bring enough talent in, that certainly can offset, maybe some of the development skills. But nonetheless, I mean, he's got some guys to work with. He was very happy with the running back room. He's obviously only been, on campus now for, I don't know, maybe a month now, a couple of weeks. And he even made a comment. He joked, "It's like, I haven't even been on the north side of campus yet. I've been told there's a north campus, but I haven't stepped foot over there." So he's still got some learning to do. He still has some more evaluation to do. He's very familiar with Donovan Edwards, as we've talked about. He recruited him out of high school. So he knows him very well. He joked afterwards too, when he was on his way down or up to Ann Arbor, driving from Columbus to Ann Arbor to take the job, he got several calls from Donovan Edwards asking him, "Hey, are you here yet? Are you here yet?" So obviously there's a good relationship there. He likes Donovan. He thinks he can be a very good player. So we'll see. But he certainly so far has been a good fit. The players seem to, like him. He seems like a personal guy, and everything I've been told, even during his time in Columbus, he's very well respected. So I think he adds something to the coaching staff. He'll certainly help the players. We'll see where this thing goes, but it's certainly different seeing him in the Michigan blue as opposed to the scarlet and gray and red.
Yeah. I mean, we talked to Lamar Morgan, you know, the same day. And I mean, he's an assistant coach who, you know, talked about having to get rid of his, you know, previous school's clothes because they were red. Okay. Just because the same color as Ohio State. And then you got Alford, who it literally is Ohio State stuff. It's got that block O on it. So yeah, it's just, it is wild, but yeah, revamped staff, you know, starting from the head coach and all the way down, especially on the defensive side. So, yeah, something to look out for. And, you know, you'll get to see, you know, the Wolverines in action kind of for the first and only time before the season starts, public appearance, at least, you know, fans can attend on Saturday, which for this annual spring game. What's the time? You got kickoff time for that? I should have looked it up before, but
noon on Fox.
Noon, and it's on Fox if you want to watch on TV. That's wild. Ohio State was on Fox too, yes, this past weekend. Is that
correct? I guess there's a story behind that. I was told last week a call was made to Fox to get Gus Johnson and Joel Klatt. Michigan wanted them to be honorary captains for this year's spring game. And Fox, I guess, told them, sure, we'll send them. But we want to put your game on the network. They'll have them call the game and, you know, it'll be, you know, kind of kill two birds with one stone. Michigan obviously was for it. But I guess by agreeing that to that, Ohio State also had felt like they needed to put Ohio State on as well. So that's the reason why Ohio State's game this past Saturday was also on Fox. So yes, first time on Fox, usually they're on Big Ten Network. But I was curious myself because they're usually on BTN. So I asked last week and that was the story I was given.
Yeah. Now I'm not sure Gus will actually be there when all is said and done with the NBA playoffs. Yeah,
he may be calling that. I guess as of last week, it hadn't been decided. But yeah, he may not be there. I don't know. But definitely Joel Klatt will be on the call Saturday.
Yeah, I think Charles Woodson might be involved in some capacity also, I had heard. But yeah, that'll be interesting. You don't need a true play-by-play guy for the spring game. I don't think it's as important. So who knows? It might just be Joel and Woodson. I'm not sure.
Did you guys watch any of the Ohio State broadcast at all on Fox? Because I saw in the Tigers telecast yesterday, they were saying that the Tigers announcer missed the game because he had to call the Ohio State spring game. I'm like, that just doesn't seem right, but or strange. But I don't know if any of you guys knew anything about that.
No, I didn't watch it. But yeah, I think Benetti, yeah, might have done it. Is that right? That could be. Yeah, but yeah, that's something to look forward to. I mean, is there any, I'm sure, we'll have stories up on mlive.com/Wolverines, but I don't know, maybe each of you guys give me some you'll be looking for in that game.
I think the low-hanging fruit here is the quarterbacks, right?
Sure.
You want to see all of them and how they play and how they look. I think Orgy's arm is going to be interesting just because we've only seen him throw one pass in his Michigan career. Is he accurate? Can he throw the football? I'm going to be paying attention mostly to the quarterbacks, but I mean, there's a lot to pay attention to. I mean, almost every spot, there's some type of storyline, whether it's a backup or starter or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, I wish I could say something different, but like it's the quarterbacks is the story. Like their spring games are boring as hell anyway. So, but like at least this year there's a quarterback battle to monitor. So, I mean, you never know. There could be some other breakouts. Like last year there was Peyton O'Leary, who was a walk-on receiver, who had a big game. You had Benjamin Hall, who was a freshman running back, who kind of opened some eyes. So it'll be cool to see just random players step up and have a big game. But like for actual next year and what matters for next year, it's all about the quarterback play.
Yeah, that'll be the biggest cheer of the afternoon, I would guess, when Alex Orgy completes his first pass, because you know that we know what he could do as a runner, and you know he's already on the roster for a couple of years. So I think he's maybe the guy that fans would be rooting for to win the job. You know, and from what they've heard so far, you know, maybe he's you know the leader in the clubhouse. I don't know, but yeah, that'll be a big cheer, I'm sure, when they see that happen. All right, yeah, so that's Saturday. We'll have continued, you know, coverage leading up to it and then afterwards on mlive.com/Wolverines. Let's talk a little hoops. On the men's side, there's now two returning players, Will Cheddar and George Washington III. George withdrew from the transfer portal, which doesn't happen all that frequently. We've talked about this. I mean, I think any player who enters because of a coach getting fired and does so before the new coach is hired, which is what George did, is maybe more likely to return than, you know, other players in different circumstances, but still it's notable. And then you've got, Daryl Fat Brooks from Grand Rapids. He's still committed. So I guess, you know, three scholarships accounted for the men. But yeah, it's we're going to be adding to that, you know, probably sooner rather than later. You know, Michigan hosted players this past weekend, so you know, additions to the roster are coming. They will come through the portal, including, you know, potentially former Florida Atlantic players that Dusty may coach there. I had a recent story on MLive.com/Wolverines listing a bunch of players whom Michigan had contacted, and that list has even grown, you know, since I published that. You know, Danny Wolf is a notable name we've talked about before from Yale. Trey Townsend now, the star, you know, of that Oakland team that, you know, won a game in the NCAA tournament, the power forward for that team, grew up in Michigan, now in the portal, and Michigan is a possibility. You know, there's high school players, of course. I think the more of those Dusty May can get, the better. We talked about, he reached out to Liam McNeely, a five-star in this class. He this past weekend hosted a player who was committed to Florida Atlantic, but, you know, decommitted after, you know, May came to Michigan. That's Lorenzo Kaysen, a 6'2" guard. No composite ranking on the 24/7 site, but 24/7 Sports itself has him as a three-star prospect. I don't know. I think you just have to kind of trust Dusty there, right? I mean, he recruited him to Florida Atlantic, and he must think that he's a good player, and, you know, maybe potentially capable to at least in time, you know, be a contributor at the Big Ten level. So and he had offers from Seton Hall, South Florida, and then a bunch of mid-majors as well. Justin Pippen, Scottie Pippen's son, an uncommitted prospect in this class, who's I guess Michigan is in the mix for him. You've got Kenai Roos, who's you know, Michigan was a three-man class for this year before Juwan was fired. You know, two of them, you know, asked out of their national, or one asked out of his national letter of intent. You know, Roos hadn't ever signed his, but he's still decommitted. But Michigan's still back in the mix. So, yeah, they're going to fill this roster in a variety of ways. And, you know, we should have a commitment, you know, I would think a couple, maybe at least, you know, sometime this week. And then, you know, over the next few weeks, they fill out the roster.
Hashtag trust the dust.
Yeah, trusty and dusty. Yeah. On the women's side, it's been, you know, departures. Since our last pod, two other starters have transferred, Kyra Evans and then the real stunner, Layla Filia, the leading scorer for the team. That's five Wolverines that have now entered the portal since the season ended. Three were graduates. So, I mean, I'm not saying I don't count them, but I don't know. That is different to me. Still concerning overall, this trend. Again, especially Filia, leading scorer, like I said, all Big Ten player this past season, which was her junior year. So she's got, you know, 1 year left of eligibility too. She doesn't have the COVID year. And I don't know, it's reminiscent of Hunter Dickinson. Like to me, as far as, like, you know, just how stunning it kind of was. And, you know, I'm told maybe it could be similar reasons as far as NIL being a factor. But it also means she could be back potentially. So I don't know. We'll obviously be monitoring that, but it's, it's not good. They got a great freshman class coming in, but, yeah, you wonder, you're so close to, you know, graduating from Michigan, getting that degree, and then you're going to maybe go elsewhere. Yeah, is it NIL? Is it, you know, better chance at winning? I don't know. It's we're all speculating at this point, but yeah, not good.
It is funny how, like, it seems like Michigan comes up with all these new NIL initiatives and they generate a lot of hype early on, and then they kind of just goes to the back burner and we don't really hear much about it, and it still is an issue with the university. So I don't know how much will change, but yeah, I also heard that NIL played an issue that, or played a factor there, and which is, it's that's just the landscape of college athletics now. But man, like you said, Andrew, with the freshman class coming in, you'd like to have a leader, a go-to player to surround them with, and you still might if she decides to return, but just her, the fact that she entered 1 year away from graduating potentially is worrisome.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, we'll have you know, we'll have stories on MLive.com/Wolverines about, you know, where all these players end up, and, you know, the kind of, again, the revolving door that is now, you know, college rosters here this time of year. So yeah, stay tuned for continued coverage, and thank you for listening.